This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Warren, and it is Friday, and a lovely Friday it is to live in the mid-Willamette Valley. So thanks for joining us with your lunch hour. We're going to kick you off the weekend talking about things that are going on in the Mid-Valley here in Salem and Kaiser, Marion and Polk County. And you know this is the place to be. So I started my day by driving a convertible top-down to Portland.
What?
Yeah, it's a great time in late September to be driving top-down in the mist. Oh, did I mention the windshield wipers
mist
didn't work? So other than that, it was a delightful morning.
You know, hence, you were taking your car in.
You know, Dave, that I was taking my car to a specialist. You know, I'm a believer in buy local.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've said here on Newsmakers that I don't even go to Woodburn. If I'm shopping, you know, for Christmas shopping or clothes shopping, I'm not even driving as far as Woodburn. Does that make me lazy or loyal?
Loyal.
So I like to shop downtown Salem and this and that. But when it comes time to work on a 45-year-old car...
Yeah, you take it to a specialist.
Foreign car. Yeah, there's only so many people. They're not like on every corner. But I got it done in time to make it here to share the lunch hour with you. Folks, we're going to talk about something. We got a couple of guests today.
Yes.
A couple of guests today. And hopefully we'll have time to squeeze in some of the current events and newsworthy items.
Because it is Friday.
Several.
Yeah.
But let's start with, we're going to talk to our first guest.
Okay.
So, Mr. Graves,
yes.
Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's nice to have you. So, Josh, you work for Catholic Community Services. So let's tell everyone what the heck that is.
Yeah. So awesome. Catholic Community Services is a local nonprofit right here in Salem. A lot of people don't know.
Time out. I'm going to interrupt you right there already. So we have Catholic Community Services here in Salem.
Yep.
Is it part of a greater organization that's also statewide or nationwide, or is this a local thing?
Really, we're focused on our local community. We've been here since 1937, so we actually predate Catholic Charities in Oregon. And we started as a parish ministry of the St. Vincent de Paul Catholic Parish in Salem here, really during the first Great Depression. And the early mission was really basic needs for families during the Great Depression. So they had like soup kitchens and clothing closets and jobs. That was the big thing, was connecting people with jobs, helping people get employment during the Great Depression. And we've continued on since 1937 right here in Salem.
Wow. What a history that is. I hope there's a book about that. I hope you have some archives that simply can trace back, because what a need it was at the time, right? And then you formalized as Catholic Community Services in 1937.
Well,
that's when you started, right?
Yeah, no. Being born in 72, that was a little before my time. But really, we formalized in 1958 when we started the Community Counseling Center, which was the first outpatient mental health services in the mid-Willamette Valley. And I'm so honored to say that the Community Counseling Center continues to this day.
Wow.
So started in 1958 and is continuing to provide outpatient community-based mental health services to our community.
Oh, it's so needed too, right? And that's 60 years. And you're thinking mental health in the late 50s?
Yeah.
It was barely really on America's consciousness at the time.
Absolutely.
Did that have to do with a lot of people coming back from the war? Did it have to do with... kind of a burgeoning drug culture, or just have to do with general societal mental health?
I think it was just people were listening to needs. There was a lot of the profession that was developing around mental health needs. People were beginning to understand it and understanding the value of having some professional services for people when they were experiencing what we now call mental health crisis. I don't think that's what they called it then, but now we know it as a mental health crisis. And since then, we've really focused on mental health services for children and families. It's one of 14 programs that we provide, but we focus on children and families.
Wow, 14 programs now.
Yeah.
How does that all get funded?
So a lot, we get a significant funding from government contracts. We provide services for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We have 15 group homes and day support activities for people experiencing intellectual and developmental disabilities. That's government funded through contracts. The mental health services are funded by our local coordinated care organization. We have several other governmental contracts. And we have a large donor base.
So, Josh, we're talking to Josh Graves of Catholic Community Services, and some of those things are everyday words for you, but for our listener, perhaps not. So what kind of – you can give us an example of who might be in that group home when you say intellectual or developmental challenges. What was the word you used?
Yeah, absolutely. So really it's just the people that we live with here in our community that experience autism or Down syndrome or sometimes traumatic brain injuries, and they work with the county developmental disability services and get referred to our homes. We have staff that work in the homes, but we really see it as the people that we serve, it's their home. So we're working in their home, providing services to them in their home. Used to be that we had primarily five people in a home, and now it's really three for the most part. We do have some, we have also specialized in medically fragile individuals who experience intellectual and developmental disabilities. So we have several homes that really focus on medical needs as well as the intellectual developmental disabilities.
Wow. And most of those are funded by some sort of state contract?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. How does the state get away with doing business with a Christian organization? Holy cow. There should be a law against that. If you're... It's just Josh was looking at me like, is he serious?
It's surprising how it's just reached the news now saying, oh, I can't do that anymore. I mean, you've been doing it for years.
Oh, we have. We started, we were strong advocates for the closure of the Fairview Institution here in Salem. And so we really started taking into or accepting, individuals in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, and just such a, these homes are absolutely beautiful. They are such places of joy and happiness where people get the supports that they need to live to their own dreams, to their own hopes, to their own dreams, and we're just there to help them along the way.
So now there's 14 programs, and I interrupt you to help us understand what one of those was.
Yeah.
So so you have group homes and quite a number of them.
Yeah, 15.
And you have 15. How many more do we need? I mean, could we open 100 and fill them if we had the resources?
Well, the future of what we're really seeing in that service is really that people can live in their own homes often, and really it's more about bringing support into their own homes. Supported living is what it's called. And we're starting to move in that direction as well, where we have staff that are going into people's own homes and providing services in their own homes with basic needs, daily living, financial management, transportation, some of those type services. So really people can live in their own setting, their own choice, their own desire. And I think that's a big part of the future. There'll always probably be a need for some group homes, but really figuring out, and then how do we mobilize the community? Volunteerism is such a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And so our belief as an organization is there's a need for professional services, and we can provide those professional services. But if we can use volunteer relationships where people just connect and provide natural supports, and then we only use the professional services to fill the gap when it's necessary.
So you're a Catholic. I'm outed you right there on the radio. Everybody knows now Josh Graves, who works for Catholic Community Services, is a Catholic. I'm a Lutheran. Would you accept me even though I've been Reformed? Would you accept
Absolutely.
Me as a volunteer? So not
Absolutely.
I imagine that some of your parishes in the greater Catholic community are a big bulk of your own volunteers.
Yes.
And certainly they
yes.
hear the call yes. to help Catholic Community Services more often yes. than maybe, a Baptist might or somebody at the synagogue. But certainly you're going to get people of faith or even people without faith that want to volunteer because you're doing good work in the community,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, we accept everybody that wants to volunteer. I have to say, when it comes to faith, we have a really diverse volunteer group. We have a diverse employee group. One of the things a lot of people don't understand is you don't have to be Catholic to work at Catholic Community Services.
Mm-hmm.
We have values that we have to uphold around our Catholic faith that are really important to us. But you don't have to be Catholic to work here. You don't have to be Catholic. And we serve everybody. You know, we often say that our job isn't to impose our faith, or our goal isn't to impose our faith. Our job is to expose our faith.
Well said. That's Josh Graves. He's with Catholic Community Services. In case you're scratching your head right now or complaining, I'm just kidding, folks. I'm just kidding. I find it somewhat bemusing. Back, I mean, when I was born, or maybe in the 50s, you know, Baptists thought the Lutherans going to hell, and the Lutherans thought the Presbyterians were going to hell, and now we're all just kind of Christian brotherhood and so forth. So some of the differences in the congregation I find amusing. So don't take me seriously about that, folks.
No, I'll slap him during the break.
Hey, we do have to take a break. We're going to come back and talk to Josh Graves and learn about the other 13 programs we haven't heard about Catholic Community Services. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. Thanks for joining us. We have Josh Graves here in the studio with us today. We're talking about Catholic Community Services. We like to spotlight people who do good things in our region.
He does a lot of good things. And yeah. For the record, what is your exact title?
My exact title is Deputy Executive Director.
He's a big wig.
Deputy Executive Director. What's your next title?
Well, I'll be assuming the role of Executive Director in January 1st when Jim Seymour, our longtime Executive Director, 46 years with the organization, retires.
Wow.
46 years. And he's leaving already? What? That's all he's got? That's all he got in the tank? 46 years?
Well, that means I only have about 10 more years to retire.
It means you waited a long time for the promotion.
Well, I haven't waited 46 years.
How long you been there?
I've been there almost 20 years.
That's pretty good.
That is awesome. Yeah. Great resource. And so a lot of things that you do, I think, flies under the radar, and most people don't hear about them on a day-to-day basis. I think a lot of people would be surprised at the breadth at which you guys impact and service the community.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons we love to have you on Newsmakers and kind of expose that and plug people in hey, that's something I'm passionate about and I want to help, or just an acknowledgement. They could help by volunteering or contributing. And, you know, we like to spotlight people who have invested in the community. You guys, obviously, through your services and your dedication in your decades. And sometimes it's an entrepreneur or things like that. So, we were talking during the break about your initiative and healthy...
Fostering hope.
You have so many programs, we can't even get to them today, but let's talk about Fostering Hope and what the goals are.
Yeah, so Fostering Hope is really exciting to us. It's very innovative in health and human services and social services. So we've identified some neighborhoods in Marion and Polk counties that just need some neighborhood strengthening work, some community building, family strengthening, and we have worked to develop a professional position called a certified community health worker, and they work inside of the neighborhood. So they represent the neighborhoods, they live in the neighborhoods they work in, and they work with connecting people with services, making referrals. They host what are called community cafes. It's based on the World Cafe model, where people in the community just get together and they talk about the community needs. Kind of have this framework called the Strengthening Families Protective Factors. And it's five protective factors that if we can build those in families and expand them through the neighborhoods, you see entire populations get healthier. And you just see neighborhoods get stronger. So we have the civic engagement outreach where we're working inside the neighborhood and work really close with the elementary schools. In fact, we're defining the neighborhoods that we work in by the elementary school.
Mm.
So work really closely with the principals and the CSOCs with those elementary schools, and then the families and that broader neighborhood. This idea of place-based social services or place-based health and human services, totally innovative. And so proud that we're doing it right here in Salem and in Polk County.
So, Josh, how many employees in the region that work for Catholic Community Services?
Yeah, so we have about 380 employees
in
our organization. Yeah, it's a large organization.
Wow.
We serve six counties primarily, which is Marion, Polk, Yamhill, Lynn, Benton, Lincoln. We also have some services in Tillamook, Clatsop, and Columbia.
Wow. Holy cow. And so you said that some money are government contracts. There's a lot of private donations and charitable way. Yeah. So, and do you also get ongoing support through the Catholic parishes in the region?
Parishes have been very supportive of us, and we just can't say enough about the partnership with the parishes. We have a great Catholic community here locally. Sorry for all the Lutherans and others, but I got to say that. We really appreciate that.
He just outed you, Brent.
Oh, man.
Hey, you started it in the last segment.
That's true. You did.
But just great support from all of our parishes here locally. And we get support. So one of the programs we have is the Father Taft Homes for pregnant teens, for unwed moms. We've had that program. Well, Father Taft started in the 1980s, and we acquired it after Father Taft passed away. And it's really supported statewide by the Catholic parishes, the Knights of Columbus, and a whole host of other donors. It's entirely donor-funded.
Wow. That's amazing and wonderful. And so some of us are familiar with the work of Salem Leadership Foundation and their Lightning Rods, where they're also, and it's a similar, there are some parallels there into being in a community and then creating connections, finding a need, finding a relationship, creating connections so that people get services and things can happen that are good. How would you drive a comparison between the two?
Well, first of all, when you say Salem Leadership Foundation, hey, Sam Skillern, that just got to talk about Sam. Sam is just a great champion in our community. And going back to the Fostering Hope Initiative, we have the Fostering Hope Executive Council, which is made up of 8 organizations, including the Salem Leadership Foundation and Sam Skillern. So work so closely with that organization and Sam. And the Lightning Rods and our certified community health workers work really closely together in these neighborhoods. So they have a little broader geography than a specific elementary school catchment area, but really they're closely aligned, working together. Can't say enough about our partnership with Sam and the Salem Leadership Foundation.
And that is the thing about Salem. We talk about this quite a bit. In Salem-Keizer is the need for collaboration.
Yeah.
And that... And then if you're talking about networking or business and sometimes even socially, Salem, it seems like we're a one degree of separation town.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people from Portland or people who are not familiar with it, we're so not Portland.
No.
Right? Where Portland, you can be anonymous. And here, we are one degree of separation town. So, and for you guys to get your mission accomplished, and sometimes you're working with Salem Leadership Foundation or the school principal or a medical provider, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, let's say I have the job. And I'm assigned to a region with an elementary school.
Yeah.
What am I going to do during the course of a week?
Yeah, so you're going to be hosting Community Cafe in that neighborhood, bringing together folks from that neighborhood, talking about these strengthening families, protective factors as the framework. You know, we kind of use this idea of what's working really well right now in the neighborhood. So let's not talk about what's wrong with neighborhoods. Let's talk about the strengths with neighborhoods. How do we build those? And then as we think about the future for a neighborhood, what does even better look like? Let's get the people in the neighborhood to dream with the certified community health worker. Talk about what is even better. But when we talk about what's working now, what's better look like, there's a gap. Right? How do we get to what's awesome? And so then we talk about with that community, how do we fill that gap? How do we close that gap to the future of what really great looks like in the future for that community? So it's this totally strengths-based civic engagement approach. And we're not there telling people what their community should like. We're asking them, what do you want your neighborhood to look like? What can we do to support you? What can we do to bring in the supports that you need to make your community look the way you want to look in the future?
Wow. We're talking to Josh Graves. He's with Catholic Community Services. And I love the way you put that. That is a great, I'm going to have to, we should all just steal that. Let's go ahead. We're going to take that concept.
It's not copyrighted or anything, is it?
What's right?
Yeah.
Right. Let's start with what's right. America doesn't think that way enough.
No.
America wants to focus on what's wrong and what we need to be at or what's utopian. If we're not utopian, then we need to be angry at somebody. But what's right? And then what can be better?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What could be better? Oh, there's a gap there. Well, what did we do to make those steps, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. That is awesome. All right, let's talk. We got a few more minutes. So this, we've really just scratched the surface of Catholic Community Services. Over 300 employees in the area of 6 counties?
Yeah, 6 primary.
Is there expansion plans? Are we going to go statewide? We're going to see you in Medford soon? Or does it get to a point where it's so large it's unwieldy?
I don't know that it's so much large and being unwieldy, but but really, we need to listen to the community. That's what we focus on. We focus on listening. I have to say, our board of directors is amazing at listening to our community. We have a committee of our board of directors called the Ownership Linkage Committee, and we see the ownership of our organization, our nonprofit organization, as the people of Oregon. So this committee's role is to listen and to hear. We've also been operating a lot of affordable housing units. We have about 300 units of affordable housing, and our board recently pulled together a large group of the people that live in our housing and basically asked that same question: what's working well right now? What does even better look like? And what can we do to close the gap in the affordable housing that we operate for you to live in? And just so proud of our board.
300 units, that's good. And we need more. We talk about affordable housing a fair bit here on Newsmakers. So that's
well, fair bit.
Fair bit.
Yeah.
Well, it intersects with so many things.
A lot.
Economic development, human services needs, the homeless, zoning and regulation, politics at the Capitol intersects with a lot of things. And the need is there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So there's got to be another dozen programs.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're not in charge of them all, right? Or will you be soon?
Well, I have some responsibility for all of them, but you're not going to make me list them, are you?
No. I wouldn't put you on the spot here without giving you 10 minutes and a pen, to be able to write them down.
I probably could.
Could you? Yeah, that's pretty good. If I had 12 kids, I probably couldn't have named them. That's just the way my brain works all at once.
The last one would be, hey, you.
So your first job with Catholic Community Services was what?
Yeah, I started as an intake and assessment coordinator right here when our office was on Glenbrook Road in Kaiser. And worked my way through the organization, moved into a youth and family counselor position, and then was a program manager, program director, and just kind of worked.
Which program did they hand you first?
I started out in our therapeutic foster care program. Oh. Yeah,
also a topic we favor here on Newsmakers.
Yeah, yep. And then my first manager position was in our Latino youth residential program.
So, what kind of relationship interaction? Collaboration do you have with the Catholic community schools?
Yeah, so really been doing really work closely with Blanchette High School, and they volunteer for us on a regular basis, connecting with them. Just met with Bob Weber, the principal over there, or president over there, just last week to talk a little bit more about that.
Aren't the kids at Blanchette required to do volunteer service in the community services?
They are.
So they can tap into you guys.
They are.
Awesome.
We had a group of them at Oktoberfest, volunteering in the Father Taft booth at Oktoberfest, helping raise money for our Unwed Mothers program there. And we just had our annual event on Wednesday, had the student council volunteering at our annual event down at the conference center.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So close with Blanchette, and I know there's elementary schools that are tied to some of the congregations in the parishes, right?
Yeah, you bet.
Well, that is terrific. We're talking to Josh Graves, Catholic Community Services. Want to give you an idea of the services that they provide. If somebody wants to help, they said, you know what, I was a teen mom and I didn't have the resources I'd like to plug in, or anybody who is touched by the kinds of things you're servicing and they want to help, who should they reach out to?
Yeah, so Heidi Frederick is our volunteer coordinator at Catholic Community Services. And if we connect them with Heidi, she'll get them on a list. One of the great things Heidi does is whenever we have a volunteer opportunity available regular volunteers and casual volunteers. Regular volunteers say, you know what, I want to work 4 hours a week, or I want to volunteer 4 hours a week. Casual volunteers say, hey, you got an event, call me up, I'll help out with an event. She connects both of them, both casual volunteers and regular volunteers. And she just loves volunteerism. That's the exciting thing about Heidi.
That's quite a daunting job.
It is.
Coordinate a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, Josh, one more question, then we're going to have to take a break. You look out at the community. You get a large view, a 50,000-foot view, and you look at the needs in all the programs, and where is our biggest gap to get to even better?
Yeah, that's a daunting question, right? We gotta get people engaged in their neighborhoods, neighbors helping neighbors. And I know if Sam Skillern was here, he'd say the exact same thing. But professional services fill a limited gap when professional services are needed. But are needed, but we've got to get people talking to each other, neighborhoods. I know when I was a youth growing up or a child growing up in my neighborhood, any parent that yelled at me for anything I was doing wrong in that neighborhood was just as daunting as my own parents, because I know that second call was going to be to my own parents. That was the kind of community. And we have that community in a lot of places, but there's places that we just need to grow community. We need neighbors talking to neighbors. We need people looking out for each other. There's so much more that we can do through relationship with each other than professional services will ever be able to provide.
All right. We're going to have to take a break here. We want to thank Josh Graves of Catholic Community Services for being here today, giving an idea of their mission and what they do in the community. And later in the hour, we're going to talk to Linda Neff. We're going to give a little equal time to those people from those Protestants. Some Protestants we're going to talk to have an event coming up. So stick with us. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Warren, and it's Friday, and you're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends of Kyler Tile of Salem. Yeah.
Welcome.
What are you waiting for?
Welcome back. Yeah. Welcome back to the studios, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We just had Josh Graves of Catholic Community Services. We learned so much from our guests, and they give us so much to think about and talk about. During the break, Dave had the same thought I did when Josh was saying, we need to connect these neighbors. We need to connect. We need to have a sense of neighborhood and sense of community, right? And Dave Bourne says, yeah, we need to get them off the screens and out and play. So,
yeah.
Right?
Get the kids off the screens, get out and play. That's where the neighborhood starts, is with the kids getting together and playing outside until the lights come on.
Yeah. You should know every kid in your neighborhood
you
by their name.
You should know every family that's in your neighborhood. Seriously.
Well, I saw Johnny, and he was smoking. He tried to hide it, but he was.
Yeah, right? You could not get away with stuff like that with your friends and their parents.
I love
you. Like he said, you know, you were afraid of your friends' parents, too, because they were like your parents.
That's right.
Right? Because if you did something wrong and they caught you, they were calling your parents to let them know.
Did you know that little Johnny pushed Susie down? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that was very nice.
He was being a bully today.
And that's why Susie got up and punched him in the eye and gave
right?
him back. But we're going to hear about it.
She was defending herself.
You sound like, I love it, because you're not that old. Dave's not that old, but he sounds like an old geezer. Well, they need to go out and play. Go out and play until the sun goes down, right?
I'm almost to the point of get off my lawn. Almost.
Oh, man. We got to stop
not yet,
that
but almost. Soon.
It is true. And I recently saw a picture, one of these funny things you see on the internet and probably on a Facebook feed, and the caption on the GIF or meme or whatever you call them said, thank God for the people that went outside to play.
Yes.
And it's a picture of a baseball game, mm-hmm. and there's a kid in the stands staring at a screen, and a baseball bat or a portion of a bat is about to hit him in the face.
Oh,
and then there's
man.
Behind him, there's a woman holding a screen and throwing, kind of turning away. And then next to the boy is a man, and he's looking, you know, straight forward, and he's got his arm out, and it's going to deflect and stop that bat. He had his eyes up, and
he's paying attention
because he went out to play.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. He knows what happens. He's seen a bat fly through the air before. He went out and played in rough and tumbled and so forth.
Well, when you go to a baseball game, you don't go to watch your screen. The action's in front of you. Not to mention, you always brought your glove because you never knew when you could catch a fly ball.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
You always wanted to get that ball.
But it's also the thing where if you have gone out and played stick ball or just ride bikes and all of these things, you know, it's not the first time you've seen flying debris.
Right. Or had to yell down the other end, car!
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Car coming. Here we go.
And then when the first street light comes on, you're like, oh, gotta go.
Yeah. That's the timing. All right. A couple things. In case you're wondering, folks, I did. You just reminded me, Dave.
Uh-oh.
Dave Bourne, thank you. I have such a different upbringing than, say, my better half. So I spent my first 10 years in Iowa, and I was that stereotypical kid where right. I don't think I put shoes on for a couple of months during the summer, and nobody had fences, and it was you go out and play. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't necessarily rural. We lived in a small town. That was kind of rural. And then medium-sized city. But, yeah, you just went out and played. Mm-hmm. And the sun came down. And you were nodding in agreement so hard you hit your own microphone.
I just hit my face on the microphone.
Anyway, that colors my perspective, folks, unless you're trying to figure out what's Brent coming from. All right, a couple things in the news. Let's talk about a couple things in the news before we run out of time. The trash burner. We've had San Brentano, Marion County Commissioner, talk about this.
Yeah.
And I'm a big proponent. And folks, if you really don't know what we're talking about, when you're driving up I-5, just look for the big red and white smokestack in the building. And that's where our solid waste is going. As Commissioner Brentano had spoken to us about, they did get a one-year contract with Covanta. And Covanta is the corporation that built and owned this under contract with the state, with the county. So they got a one-year reprieve, as it were. And so we have another year to convince the Portland area.
What do they have to do with it?
Legislators, because they really need the tax break for renewable energy credits.
So what does Portland have to do with it?
Because they don't believe that anything that involves burning anything is green.
Again, what do they have to? Why do they have anything to say about it?
Because they're saying no at the legislature about whether or not this use qualifies.
You mean the Portland legislatures?
Yes. Yeah.
And okay, so the rest of the state legislators can't overrule those people?
Quantity, you have an issue, and you have an issue because they're all registered Democrats, right? Hey. And so the Democrats are going with the, if it's carbon, it is bad, end of conversation.
They need to be told that they're carbon.
Yes. So you are, you're using
Shut
natural gas?
Shut your carbon mouth.
Such a carbon mouth. That's not the last time we're going to hear that.
No, I'm going to trademark that. All right. That just came out. Sorry.
So basically, what the county's been lobbying for is to count what they do as for a renewable energy tax credit. And they're not getting it. They're not getting the exclusion to include them because they're burning natural gas mm-hmm. to turn waste to energy. And if you're listening, Commissioner Cameron, I got it in. It's waste to energy, right?
Right. It
it's
is.
It's not a trash burning plant. It's waste energy. So they burn the solid waste and turn it into energy, and it goes back in the grid, right?
That's the ultimate green energy is what that is.
Yeah. And the danger was they were going to mothball the facility. Covanta was just going to say, it doesn't really pencil. We're just going to shut it down. And
it doesn't pencil trucking your garbage and debris to Arlington.
Right, which is the alternative. But
that is not penciling out for
Marion
me.
Marion County and the ratepayers would have to pay for that. It's not Covanta. Covanta is like, we operate the burner, and if the burner's not going to pencil, then they're going to shut it down, and then we're all going to be stuck with that bill.
That's right? A big bill.
Yeah, and it's a big issue. And
that's
then,
a lot of garbage.
Then it's the discussion about how much greenhouse gases are we creating by just dumping in a landfill. This discussion, is this sustainable?
Well, not to mention the diesel and everything used and to truck it.
Yes.
And are they not thinking about that?
And the additional gridlock on the roads and so forth and so
forth. Yeah, that's a lot more trucks on the freeways. And yeah, like we don't have enough trucks on the freeways. Have you seen a backup on I-5? Three quarters of them are trucks.
So according to Commissioner Cameron in the article, if you want to check it out in Salem Reporter, 36 other states, the federal government in Europe, consider this renewable.
It is renewable.
Well, and Dave Bourne. 36 other states, the feds, all of Europe, and Dave Bourne believe
Thank
it's renewable. But, you know, that's our obstacle. We have 1 year to try to get them to sit down, get educated, and include that because, you know, then it continues to be viable and profitable for Covanta, and so we don't have to charge the ratepayers and all those other negative consequences we're talking about.
If I could create a waste burner in my neighborhood, I'd do it because that would generate enough electricity for the neighborhood with mm-hmm. their garbage.
And we also, you know, you have the opportunity. If I could wave my magic wand, I would build 3 or 4 of them in the county, and I'd go into the business of handling other county solid waste.
Right? The entire state.
Right. Get some economies of scale. And the output, folks, and if you haven't heard us talk about this before, the output when the process is done is a sterile ash. It's
right?
a sterile clean ash that can be used in infill, clean and not leaching chemicals and not leaching methane. And the real distinction here and the problem the county is having with the environmentalists is nobody measures the methane coming out of the landfill. They can't measure it.
That would be a problem.
They know it's there. You could literally like have an internal flame in some of these places.
Wow, that's
bad. But they can measure what comes out of the plant. So like, oh, well, you have this coming out. You have this amount of emissions.
Like, we should.
Yeah, but it's still better than this.
If, right. We should talk to a farmer or a company that, that could use the ash and till it into the ground.
One of Brent's trademarks is going to have to be, you know, when ideal is not an option, better is still better.
Yeah.
Better is still better. Anyway, the one-year reprieve is good news, and if anybody has any sway in state legislators,
call them.
Call them. Call them. Let them know. You need to look at
email
this.
Email them.
And you need to talk to your other people in your party having to do with that. Hopefully on Monday we'll get to talk about the Salem Kaiser School scores. Really, really disappointing. We're going to have a discussion about whether or not we're giving them an impossible task, but I'm going to save this for Monday. But there, Monday we have a great guest.
We do.
We have a great guest, folks. So you have,
we can talk a couple minutes about this.
Advanced day. We're going to have to dive into this because there's so many words in this article in the Statesman Journal about how we're measuring and should we the schools be responsible for X, Y, Z. And this is all the things I'm talking about. It's not reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's, you know, do they feel healthy? Do they feel safe? Do they feel supported? Do they feel how do they feel?
So it's more about the feeling than the learning.
And then it's like, yes, but is it your job to provide the safe home environment, the safe neighborhood, the safe health
practices, the parents' job.
And all of those things? Or really, can if we just asked the schools to educate, and that's all. Bring them in the building, love them with education, love them with knowledge and the power.
And structure.
But to have scores like 53% of participating students scored an adequate or higher language arts.
In language arts?
Yeah, 39 in math.
Is that reading?
Why?
39
it's
in
really
math?
Really not that hard.
You know why? I'll tell you what the downfall of the math is. Their new math.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh, not new math.
Yeah, have you seen this new math?
Well, it does change. When my
have
kids
you seen
were,
it?
Well, I don't know what you consider new math. When my kids were going through, they not only had to get the question, but they had to show like two or three other ways in which they could have gotten the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And
they have to explain their answer when they come up. 2 + 2 = 4 is no longer the usual math. They have to come up with a different way to do it, and then they have to explain how they got it there. And I'm like, that is so slow because we used to have those math tests where you did the calculations really fast, and that's how you got the proficiency.
Right.
They don't have that anymore. That's why 39% are only getting it, because the new math screwed up their minds.
It did, actually. It really, really threw them off. And it was a bit traumatic because I'm like, I don't know how to explain it. I just know the answer.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
I understand how the numbers work. I get the multiplication and the division and the edits, and I get it. I don't know how to explain it.
Right.
I mean, why do I have to do... we were doing these proofs. I would call them a proof. And when you get into, you know, calculus and trigonometry and all those things in high school level, and like you're asking a second grader to do an evolved proof of his work kind of thing.
Exactly.
Oh, it's exhausting.
My stepdaughter is a teacher and has been for 4 years now. And she is proficient in math. I mean, outstanding. And when she had to learn this new math, she's like, I don't understand why they switched it. They're making it harder for our kids to succeed. And that was the quote from her. I should get her on the phone and we should have a conversation with her about it. Because it was very eye-opening. She had to go to seminars and classes to learn how to teach the kids this new math, which makes it harder for them to succeed.
So much in this to unpack, and we talk about education, but it's so critical to having a livable community and for those of you who have families and have kids in school and their future. So I'll give you one sentence. They're investing more time and energy into panorama scores that take into account how well the student feels supported, valued, and connected to their school. What I want, that's all fine and good as an ancillary benefit. What I want them to come out feel really good about how well they can do math, mm-hmm. how well they can write,
yes.
how well they can speak.
Yeah.
I want them, how well they can understand their own history and social studies. All that's what I want them to feel good about, folks. I want you to educate them. I don't want you to make them feel good.
That's school pride. That's a different thing.
All right. We got to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come back, talk about one more great thing happening in the community before we send you off for your weekend. My name is Brent DeHart, and I'm bantering here with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
You know, some days it's just a pleasure to work with you, Dave.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Dave's got some,
every day it's a good day for you.
We have we have completely different life experiences.
We and do.
Career experiences and everything, but you've always got a good story and always got a good question. And you're funny. You guys,
oh, thank you.
You guys miss out on some of Dave Bourne's humor when you're not listening to the commercials, when you're supporting our sponsors.
You know, I had a boss way back when, early in my career, I was making side comments on, you know, we called it love jams at that time, where we had people calling up and saying they wanted to dedicate this song to so-and-so,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So we'd have a laundry list of names and things, and I had a helper that was naming them off, and I was making side comments, and my boss mentioned to me, he goes, hey, keep the comments to yourself. Trying to be funny, not good. I'm like, what? I thought I was being funny.
That sounds like Good Morning Vietnam.
I was not being funny. All right.
We got to spotlight somebody here. Good stuff. More good stuff. Linda Neff is on the phone with us talking about an event tomorrow at Salem First Church of the Nazarene. Linda, you with us?
I am.
Thanks for joining us. And thanks for this event. You're giving away clothes.
Tell us all about it.
Well, the event starts at 9 in the morning. It's at our church at 1550 Market Street Northeast. It will end at 1, and as of the count yesterday, we had about 47,000 items of clothing in the gym to give away.
No. Awesome. So we have like a minute to go over what the details are.
Okay. So we divide everything by gender, and the children's area is quite large, and it is all sized, and that's in a separate area in the gym. We don't ask any questions. Everybody is welcome. They're able to come in multiple times. We provide the bags. We have timed entrances, and while somebody's in the gym, there's another group off to the side of the sanctuary. And they are being entertained by Dan, the magic man, and he brings his magic hat and his pet rabbit, and the kids love him.
Awesome. Okay, so that's at the Salem First Church of the Nazarene, 1550 Market Street Northeast, from 9 to 1 tomorrow for free clothing giveaway. Hey, Linda, thank you so much.
That's a big church, folks. There's a parking lot.
Have a great weekend, too.
Yeah, you want to go.
Thank you so much.
You bet. All right, we're out of time. See you Monday.
See you Monday with Vance Day. Look forward to talking to him then.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.